I'm Radio. This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The movie The Social Network chronicles the meteoric rise of Harvard student Mark Zuckerberg, who, depending on whom you believe, either created or stole the idea for Facebook. Today, Facebook has more than 500 million users worldwide, and Zuckerberg was recently named the youngest, richest person in the world. The portrait the movie paints of Zuckerberg isn't very flattering, and neither is the portrait of Harvard.
Something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles.
I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
Site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours?
1,000. 22,000.
The movie sets up a basic dichotomy. On one side is the old boys club of the Harvard elite. On the other, the socially inept techno-savant Mark Zuckerberg. The story is based on the book The Accidental Billionaires by Ben Mezrich, and it's not the first time Mezrich has written a blockbuster about Cambridge-educated brains and stacks of money. He's also the author of Bringing Down the House, a book about a group of MIT students who use their smarts to milk millions from casino blackjack tables. The story was made into the film 21. Ben Mezrich joins us now. Ben, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
And listeners, we're taking calls, so if you want to talk to Ben Mezrich, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And if you've seen the movie The Social Network, especially if you're an Ivy League grad, we want to know how much of yourself you saw in the movie or whether it seemed totally alien to you, the portrayal of finals clubs and blue blood classmates. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. Ben, thanks again for coming in.
Yeah.
How closely would you say that The Social Network, the movie, reflects the story you tell us in The Accidental Billionaires, the book?
I actually think it's a very close adaptation. Almost every scene in the book makes it into the movie. Aaron Sorkin added some courtroom stuff, but he did an amazing job. I think he's a great writer. And, you know, his dialogue, a lot of the lines were from the book, but overall, you know, that's all Sorkin, you know, the walk and talk and all that kind of thing. But I think it was very close.
And Sorkin, of course, wrote the screenplay
Yes.
of the movie based on your book. Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, who's profiled and who's chronicled in this, basically,
Right.
he declined to talk to you for your book.
Oh, yeah.
So you had to write it without him. Did that feel like a handicap?
Well, you know what? I spent a year trying to talk to Mark, and he just knew I was writing a story he didn't want told. He knew I was talking to a bunch of people, including Eduardo Saverin, which was the co-founder of the company. So I actually had a lot of access to everyone except for Mark. And Mark not talking to me, I never saw as a real handicap, because if Mark talks to you, you're kind of controlled by Mark. And other people who have talked to him end up writing the Mark Zuckerberg story as he wants it told. But that's not the true story.
Did Mark explicitly say, I won't participate, or he just never respond to emails or calls?
Oh, no, no. They explicitly, I was speaking to his people every day for a year. And, you know, everyone was very nice, and it was almost, he would almost talk to me, and I got to send questions to him, and he almost answered them. But in the end, they said, we don't want you writing the authorized Mark Zuckerberg story. So in the end, they declined.
Now, fortunately, from a writer's research standpoint, you had a lot of legal documents available mm-hmm. because of the civil lawsuits filed against Zuckerberg from people who claim he stole his idea. And then you mentioned the plaintiff, Eduardo Saverin,
right.
I believe his name is, who was the former partner of Zuckerberg who later sued him. He talked to you quite a bit. How did you get a sense? What was your sense of Zuckerberg as a person talking to him and talking to his partner and reading these documents?
Well, I think the movie got it really good. Mark is a strange guy. He's very closed in. He's incredibly socially awkward. In college, he was kind of on the outside. You know, his group of nerdy, geeky friends had their faces pressed up against the window of this whole final club world that they couldn't be a part of. And, you know, he's a strange guy. He's also a very, you know, brilliant kid. He's a total genius. He's got that hacker kind of revolutionary part of him. But I think they captured it really well.
He isn't portrayed as a very sympathetic character in the book or the movie. But did you actually have any sympathy for Mark Zuckerberg?
I definitely didn't. I think, you know, the book Accidental Billionaires is a very kind of fair portrayal of him. I mean, he's a tough guy to love, but he's also brilliant, and he did something great. And I think people come out of the movie and read the book with different opinions of him. He's not all bad, but he's certainly not cuddly. I think Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher keep saying these aren't the nerds of the 80s that you want to give a hug to. I mean, these are kids who are doing something great, but they're prickly. And I think that that is Mark Zuckerberg.
Listeners, we're talking to Ben Mezrich. He wrote The Accidental Billionaires, which became the movie The Social Network, which is out in cinemas lately. And we want to know if you want to talk to Ben. We want to know if you've seen the movie. We want to know what you thought of the movie's portrayal of Harvard and the finals clubs, which are sort of the blue blood groups that really set you up socially. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ben, we've mentioned the finals clubs, and I want to talk about the finals clubs and your portrayal of Harvard in the story. The wealthy Harvard elites, sort of the old school Harvard elites, were embodied by these so-called finals clubs and by people like Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss. These are the identical twins who are basically portrayed as Greek godlike athletes who end up suing Zuckerberg because they claim he stole their idea, which became Facebook. So let's listen to a clip on that from the movie.
You must really hate the Winklevosses.
I don't hate anybody. The Winklevi aren't suing me for intellectual property theft. They are suing me because for the first time in their lives, things didn't work out the way they were supposed to for them.
So you went to Harvard. I believe you graduated in 1991. First, tell us, were you a member of a finals club?
No. I was like Mark Zuckerberg. I was a geeky, kind of socially awkward nerd as well. I knew a lot of people in the clubs, and I spent a lot of time at the Phoenix, which is in the movie, through some friends. But I was on the outside as well. While writing the book, I spent a lot of time in the clubs and with the Winklevi and with a lot of people who were members of the club. So I feel like I got it really correct.
I wonder how much you think the finals clubs really are a part of Harvard's identity today. So the movie is set in about 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. You went to Harvard you graduated in 1991. Mm-hmm. How much of a presence are the clubs now?
I mean, it's similar to when I was there. I spent a lot of time there. And the kids who are in the clubs are all there all the time, and that is their life. The clubs dominate their social life. For Harvard itself, there are two types of parties going on. There's the ones going on in the finals clubs, which are these great parties, and then there are parties in the dorm, which are a very different social life. So the social setting, you know, if you're not a member of a club and you don't have any interaction with them, you can completely ignore them, and that's true. But if you're a guy like Mark Zuckerberg, you definitely look at the clubs as a way of making your life better. And Eduardo and Mark were kids who really couldn't be a member. And then Eduardo did end up getting in and becoming a member of the Phoenix, and it changed his life. And so, you know, there are people who say, oh, Harvard's not like that anymore. But the reality is, it is. You know, you can ignore it, and you can go to Harvard and never step into a club. But the guys who are in the clubs are living a very different life than you.
One of Zuckerberg's classmates, Nathan Heller, recently wrote a piece for Slate in which he says that the Harvard's final clubs weren't that prominent. He had a line that said that they were, quote, removed from the main artery of the school's cultural life. So do you think that is, are you saying that, they, you know, they're still there and they matter to those who they matter to, but if they don't matter to you, you can tune them out and it's as if they don't exist?
Of course. I mean, when I was a geeky kid at Harvard and someone said that the clubs matter to me, I would say, of course they don't. And then if I got in, I would love to be a part of it. You know, it's true. They're not there every day. They're not, you know, officially sanctioned, essentially. I mean, they're not, you know, if you don't go to a club party on a Friday night, you're not an outcast. But the truth is that life exists and you can only press your face up to the window. So the reality is, you know, as much as people want to say, oh, the clubs don't matter to me, they're a big part of the Harvard social life.
We have a caller from Mark who wants to talk to you, and he's from Wethersfield, Connecticut. Hi, Mark. What's your question for Ben Mezrich?
Oh, hi, how are you? Hi, Ben. I just wanted to know, after listening to what you had to say, what question would you ask Mark if you had a chance to talk to him that you might feel, I mean, that wasn't in your book, and also that might make you feel like you were more of an insider to his unusual world?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, a couple things. First of all, Mark keeps saying he hasn't read the book and he won't watch the movie, but it's all fiction. I want to know what in it isn't true, because no one's ever said anything that's not true. And everyone says it's fiction, and yet no one has pointed out anything that's fiction. The other thing about, you know, parts of the story, I think the main thing I would want to ask him is Eduardo believes that Mark was his best friend, and I want to know what Mark thought of Eduardo. That would be really a good question.
We have another caller. This is Gwen from Cambridge. And Gwen, what's your question for Ben Mezrich?
My question is if Mr. Mezrich could say something about the role of women in the story, in the film, in his book, versus the way they were portrayed. I was kind of sickened by, you know, the objectification. And some people have theorized that that was Mark Zuckerberg's image of what, you know, women dancing on tables, like in the final clubs, whether this is supposed to be true, and also the lack of women and... you know, any context of women in his life other than the girlfriend? Like, you know, no mother, no people that he actually had relationships with.
Well, I mean, first of all, when you're a geeky guy at Harvard, there aren't a lot of women around you. Second of all, and I can say that from personal experience. Second of all, the way women are treated in the movie, I think, is very realistic for this story. I mean, there literally is a bus that goes from female women's school to women's school to pick up all the women to drop them off at the finals clubs on the weekends for the parties. You know, it wasn't as crazy as girls dancing on tables like in the movie, but the reality is that women, you know, for a certain segment of a fraternal type organization are objectified. And you look at the blog Mark kept when he did Face Mash. I mean, he was talking about comparing women to farm animals. So I don't think it's a very unrealistic portrayal. I do agree, you know, women should get upset about that, but I think that's what it was like.
We also have a caller from Brookline, and this is Jen. Hi, Jen. What's your question for Ben Mezrich?
Well, it seems like that Mr. Mezrich's written a couple of books that function almost like fiction. You know, they're stories, they create characters and dialogue in a way that seems fictionalized. And I know you're saying they're nonfiction. Tell me where they're, you know, show me what's fiction. I wasn't there. I don't know. But I do wonder what a book like this might have been written like if it were written by an economist or someone who was writing a nonfiction book. And, you know, if you thought about what would an economic book looking at this make of these characters, how might that look different than the stories that you tell that, you know, create romanticized characters and are, you know, easy for screenplays?
Jen, thanks for that. And let me quickly add before Ben answers that in the author's note to his book, The Accidental Billionaires, he actually calls the book a dramatic narrative account in which some conversations and scenes are recreated and compressed. So, Ben, you've acknowledged that.
Right. And I acknowledge it. I feel it's a very valid form of nonfiction. It may be a genre I'm creating, or it may be one that dates back to people like Tom Wolfe or Henry S. Thompson. But I take the true story, I get all the documentation, and then I write it like a movie. And I agree. You know, if an economist or a textbook writer sat down to write this story, it would be different and it would be boring and it probably wouldn't be a movie. I tell the story in a way that I would like to read it and people like to read it and see it as a movie, and I make it exciting, but it's still true. And, you know, the people who get mad at me, you know, there's a lot of controversy about my style. It's a lot of old world journalists, you know, at places like the New York Times who have an issue with it. But the reality is, I think it's very valid and it's a fun way to read a true story.
And Ben, you went through the same round of criticism after you wrote your MIT story about the blackjack players.
Yeah,
this is familiar,
you know,
criticism.
And no one's critiquing the facts of the story. They're just critiquing my style. And I don't mind it at all. I think it's great that people are talking about nonfiction. No one talks about textbooks, you know, and that's why I'm proud of it.
Ben, I want to read a short excerpt from your book, and it's this one. It says, like the secret societies at Yale that had gotten so much press over the years, the finals clubs were the barely kept secret soul of campus life at Harvard. Membership in one of the eight clubs granted an instant social identity. Now, we've already talked about the finals clubs, mm-hmm. but I want to contrast this to Facebook, because in many ways, Facebook now grants people an instant social identity. Is that part of what attracted you to this whole story?
It is, and that was Mark Zuckerberg and Eduardo's plan from the beginning. They wanted to create their own finals club. I mean, they were specific about that. It was exclusive. You couldn't be a member unless you were a Harvard student. And then it slowly grew from there. So yes, that very much attracted me. This hierarchical world of Harvard had never been written about like this before. No one had gotten inside this world. And I really wanted to do that. And I think that this story was perfect for it because that's what Facebook is.
Mark Zuckerberg has taken a lot of heat in the past few months because he changed the way people's Facebook accounts function so that they're less private. You have less control over what you put on there. Do you think that Zuckerberg has always just had a fundamentally different understanding of what privacy is?
Oh, absolutely. He's this hacker. You know, he believes that the world is a better place the more open we are. And he wants everyone to share all their information. And it's not about monetizing. It's not about making money off of your information. He really is a revolutionary. That's why he worshipped Napster and the creator of Napster. He wants to change the world.
And Ben, obviously the music's playing, not much time left, but I have to ask, how many Facebook friends do you have?
I try and keep it down to my actual friends, so maybe 150, I don't know.
Ben Mezrich, thank you very much for coming on Radio Boston. Ben wrote the book, The Accidental Billionaires, that is the basis for the new movie, The Social Network, out, written by Aaron Sorkin. Ben, thanks a lot for coming
in. Thank you very much.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.